Welcome, everybody. It is Wednesday, October 25th, 2017. This is Elaine, and this is the noon Eastern time, 11 o'clock Central time, PSH call. And for your benefit, Brian. And
thank you.
Let's start with celebrations and see where we go from there. Who wants to start?
I will jump in on celebrations. So we just rounded, kind of the first quarter of school. And for all three of our kids who have ADHD, the middle band, our daughter's doing really, really well, glowing reports from all her teachers. And she had one class. She was struggling a little bit in Algebra 2. She's a junior in high school and had like just a low B in math. But she had a chapter test last Friday and got a 62 out of 63, which, was
wow.
Great. And pulled her grade all the way back up to be a mid-range B, so that's fantastic. Our eighth grader, who has both autism and ADHD, has straight A's, which is fantastic, and he's doing really well.
Gotta love that autism,
actually,
like, man.
He actually had a play date. I guess we can't call it play dates once you're 13, but he had a hangout at a buddy's house for like 4 hours.
Wow.
At a couple weeks ago. It was a neurotypical kid, so it wasn't like... So it was really, and he was invited to go over there. So that was really a kind of a huge thing. He's only had a few of those happen, so that was really cool. And then our youngest ADHDer is also doing really, really well in school. So that's all good. And we've been working around the home on some more responsibility. And, it's hit and miss a little bit, but they seem to be responding. We seem to be finding some systems and agreements that are working. So a few new rules in effect. And so those are all great reasons to celebrate. One, they're doing great on the outside, which is, I'll stick with a little more turmoil on the inside if we're having success in school and cut them a little bit of break, that they, are just exhausted by the time they come home from that at the end of the day, and it's a little more of a struggle.
Cool. Very thorough celebration, I just want to say.
Got to champion each one of them, right?
You absolutely do. That's a beautiful thing. But it was just great to, it was great. Thank you. Julia, what about you? Don't get intimidated now.
No. it won't be that comprehensive or that interesting, but my 10-year-old who has a lot of dyspraxia as well as apraxia, he's a motor planning disorder. Last night I went to his he plays flag football. Football's big in Georgia, and he loves it, and he does pretty good. I mean, he's playing with, kids who are a year or two younger, but he doesn't care, and they don't seem to care, and, he got one little touchdown and caught some flags, and he works really hard, and I never would have thought he would be doing that, so that's my celebration.
Yay. There's so many things that they do that you just, you scratch your head and wonder that they do and like, and that they don't like when you thought they would, and,
mm-hmm.
So, cool. So, where do you want to take aim this week?
I'll start with that one, if I can. I've been keeping a trigger journal, and have I identified that mornings are, getting, from, I guess specifically from 6:30 to about 7:45 is by far the most difficult time of the day, and 7 days a week. It's not just during the week. And so I'd like to take aim at that. And this week with activating the brain, I'm not sure how to use it, but I'm like, that's our topic, and I want to try to take aim on activating his little brain at that time.
Okay, so
was that too many
where
things?
You want I'm just got a little lost. So where you want to take aim is on activating the brain? Is that what I'm hearing you saying? Okay, so...
Yes. At that morning
so
time.
If activating the brain is the strategy, what's the change you want to see in morning time?
Specifically, a decrease in noise.
So
I don't know if
you,
that's possible.
No, it's that. I mean, look, whatever it is, like at that age, whatever it is that makes you calmer, you know, it's legitimate, right?
Okay.
So you, the place you want to focus on is for him to be quieter in the mornings before school?
Mm-hmm.
To keep the volume down?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Singing, you know, singing loud. Yeah, just loud.
Okay.
He thinks
okay,
he's a Clash.
So what?
He thinks he's a punk rocker.
He's 10, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And he can't pronounce a word, but he's got pretty good pitch, but he can't pronounce any of the words whatsoever. So it's just one big loud thing.
Okay, so you want some a little bit of volume down, a little more peace in the morning. You're not awake yet, and he's raring to go.
Correct.
Okay. Cool. Brian, what about you?
I think I'll continue on what we were doing last time, which is really trying to get the kids to be more independent and, you know, fit in really, really well with the executive function, just realizing when they are creating a burden for others. And when I say a burden for others, it's usually a burden for me and my wife, and probably really more of a burden for her, because I will just let it sit there and tell them to go do it again, and she'll just kind of do it rather than get the clutter out of the way. So I want to keep focusing on that independence and kind of unprompted, not necessarily all self-care, but just, you know, if you eat at the table, you manage to get the food and bring it to the table in some type of dish or plate. The dish or plate could probably be, you know, returned from the table. You could wipe up your area.
Okay, I want to stop you for a minute, okay? Because that's a that's a whole, you can't take aim on everything you're saying, right? So,
nope.
I mean, you could, but it won't be very effective. So narrow in for yourself. What's the change you want to see? I mean, I know long term, the big picture is you want them to be more independent. But what's the immediate change you want them to own?
The same as we were before, just picking up after themselves.
And so last week we narrowed it to cleaning up after snacks.
Right.
Is that still?
That's
still
going
there?
Better. It's going better.
Okay.
I guess we may as well perfect that one first, because, you know, we just had like all the couches cleaned, so we've set off limits locations for food based on that, kind of trying to keep it constrained to the kitchen, which is working pretty well.
Okay, so it's now. So it used to be it was started with cleaning up after them, picking up after themselves, and we sort of narrowed it to cleaning up after snacks. And if I recall, that sort of turned into. And so what you're saying is you started sort of narrowing snacks to the kitchen, so now it's cleaning up after snacks in the kitchen.
Yeah, and can I expand it to clean, just cleaning up after eating? How about that? So it includes meals, too.
Okay, you can, and keep in mind that there are three meals plus snacks, so you're now taking area. You're sort of, it's sort of one thing, but it's sort of four things, because it may be different how you manage it for breakfast than it would be for dinner, right?
So let's re-narrow it to cleaning up after snacks / dinner, so the evening
great.
Time,
great.
Right? Just so we're not left with everyone goes to bed and then there's all this stuff that we're either faced with leaving until the morning and attracting bugs or whatever else, or you know whatever else.
Or doing the job ourselves. Yeah.
Or doing the job. Let's focus on the after school type. Assume that.
Great. That's. That's great. And what I will tell you is, just what jumps out at me as you say that, is to make sure that everybody is, and we'll get to this, I'm sure, but make sure everybody's in agreement on what cleaning up actually means.
Right.
Because it took me a while to figure out that what I thought cleaning up after dinner included was not what my son thought cleaning up after dinner included.
Oh, yeah.
Really getting clear on what that means is going to be part of the process, okay?
Yes. We're going to expect them to full ass it, not half ass it.
Right.
But that
and
is,
that, what does that mean?
That's the
I remember when my son said, "You want me to wipe the kitchen table?" I'm
exactly.
Like, yeah,
that's exactly
cleaning up
it.
After dinner.
Yes. To them, if they move it off the table, that would be cleaning up. And if that means they just deposit it in the sink and leave, you know, bowls with stuff in them in the sink or plates that have even been washed off and food sitting in the sink, that would be kind of, hey, the table's cleaned up. It has been wiped down.
I understand.
You know, whatever they put on the floor. Yep.
Okay. So absolutely. So just making sure that there's full communication there, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So today's topic is on activating the brain. And, you know, neither of you are new to this. You know that activating the brain is about, we know that what's going on with our kids is in their brains and with us, if we're managing our own triggers, and that's what influences the brains, what influences all the thoughts and the feelings and the actions. So, you know, figuring out how that brain function connects to the rest of this is key. We do this because optimizing brain function helps them reach their full potential. We do this because it has a lot to do with mood management and can reduce tantrums of theirs and ours. You know, one of the biggest changes we made in my family to impact mood was what was a code word called broccoli ice cream, because we figured out that my daughter, if she got hungry, she could not manage her emotions at all. She was about 9 at the time. And I was actually just rereading a journal I kept when she was that age. And it was just, it was like a revelation. We were so surprised to learn it. And it had been years of this behavior, and she was always melting down. And when we finally figured out it was connected to her hunger, it was amazing how quickly things shifted in the home, right? So really connecting the mood pieces, regulating mood is a big piece. And then it just, you know, helps them manage more effectively because, you know, these kids had their own neurobiological challenges. And so we talked last week a lot about executive function. That's sort of how all this manifests. And so this is really about recognizing the role that the brain plays and making sure that we are lubricating, activating, conscious of the brain when we're trying to create changes and plan and take action the way you're talking about it. And so I'm going to stop and let's have a little conversation about it because I think this is one of those topics that, I mean, I could go on for hours, but there's no need, right? So what do you two think about when you think about brain activation? How does it show up in your world? Whatever, what's coming up?
Well, I mean, I'll just agree with the one thing you said. We've got a couple kids that when they're hungry, you just can't. I mean, they've got to eat or it's full meltdown mode, right? I mean, they can't do anything and they can't process, can't rationalize. But as far as activating the brain, it's the biggest thing that triggers me is just kind of the general awareness. Because they may be so focused on something else. I mean, their brain's obviously always active, or else they would be dead. But it's activating it on what's necessary at that point in time, or what society or school or home expects and needs. Because they've got so many things going on, or they're thinking about it. They've got some, you know, like a computer. They've got something always running in the background, but you need them to focus on this spreadsheet that's now open in a window, and they've got to work on that when they've got, you know, 17 different panes competing for their information. So it's, to me, it's not as much activating the brain as it is concentrating the brain where it's expected at that point in time.
Well, so here's what I'll challenge with you a little bit, because I totally hear what you're saying, and on one level I agree with you 100%, right? On another level, a lot of our kids, the problem, if they struggle with the effort regulation issues, then activating is actually a key, is an essential piece of getting of executive function for them. So if they are an energizer bunny and their brain's going and their body's going, it's not about activating, as you say, it's about directing, focusing, you know, harnessing. But for some of our kids who have almost like a sense of lethargy or an inability to get going or get started, that actually, the activation is actually a key piece to it. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I get that and I follow you, but to me, I always have thought of that inertia is based on they've got either they're overwhelmed in their brain by the ability to start and not knowing where to go, and they've got all these scenarios playing through and they can't decide which of these 20 things is step one, or they've got something else that they're so focused on they can't transition. But I guess, I mean, yeah, certainly I guess there's a point where maybe they're just running blank at that point in time.
Sometimes. Yeah.
But I've always thought of it a little more of they can't make the first step because they can't place the first step.
I think sometimes that's the case. Although I watch my husband at 50-something years old dealing, he's probably his biggest challenge of executive function is that effort piece. And he manages it all day with, you know, five-hour energy and coffee and there are times where he just can't move. Like, he just can't get it to click in. And he knows he has to, and so he has to find a way to activate because his brain is just sort of like, it's running on neutral. And
it's defragmenting.
Yeah. So I think it's a yes and. I mean, I completely agree with you that there are a lot of other pieces to it, and sometimes it is anxiety, and you know, sometimes it is distracted. There are a lot of areas around it. I mean, Julia, you were talking about keeping a trigger journal, and managing triggers is a huge part of activation, right? Because sometimes we get overactivated or overstimulated or reactive when
yep.
we want to be engaging, right? So what's coming up for you?
This might sound kind of simplistic, but I feel like part of it's just he's just a morning person.
Yeah.
And when he wakes up, he's wide awake. He is
yep.
wide awake like nobody I've ever seen. My daughter, I have to pull out of bed, and, you know, the rest of us, well, there's only two of us, are sort of in between, you know, not real morning people, but not real groggy either. And the rest of us are all quiet people, and he's just awake and ready to go.
So
and
wakes
there,
up
maybe there's
activated.
More things than that, but yes.
Right.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
Right. So he has this energizer bunny from the moment his
first
eyes
thing.
Open. Right.
Correct. I'm thankful that he doesn't get up, you know, at 5:30 anymore.
Right.
Because that was pretty awful. And there's
it's
times,
a beautiful
you know,
day, Mommy.
Right. It's dark, right. But he's, yeah, yes, he's fully activated from when he opens his eyes.
Yeah. Well, you know,
he sleeps well.
Thing,
he goes to bed, you know, on relatively early. And falls asleep easily, and so that's sort of the flip side, because he's, you know, awake so early and evening isn't quite his time. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say it has its advantages, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so
there's
sometimes
always,
they
yeah,
are
another side.
Inherently activated, and it's about, you know, turning down the motor, as my daughter's OCD would have said, turning down the engine. Sometimes it's about getting the engine started. Sometimes it's regulating. And, you know, it's interesting, Brian, the reason we just sort of came to the term activating the brain was because, I mean, we put medication in there. And we've always wanted to take that position that there's medication and other things that do what medication does, or try to do what medication does, whatever, to mold, activate, engage, to improve the synapses and the firing in the brain. And so we landed on that term because we wanted it to be broader than medication.
Right.
And we wanted to be able to incorporate exercise and nutrition and you know, body work and sleep and all of those other aspects of life that contribute to how our brain is functioning.
No, I follow you. I still the activate is a term that It's a bit of a term of art that to me, engage works better than activate the brain.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
It's a slightly subtle shift for me, but I totally get you. I mean, and I totally understand what we're trying to focus on is you know, it's that engagement in the scenario. But I totally get it. There's times that I know at least one of my kids just space. I'm like, I'm supposed to be doing that. And just, you know, he has some real moments where he's just, like you said with your husband, you know, it's got to jolt him into movement because it would seem that he is not at all active at that moment.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I agree with you. I like the term engage a lot as well. So this is not a new concept for any of us, right? This is something we're all sort of aware of. We've been doing this for a little while. Where do you find success with activating the brain for yourselves or your kids, and where do you struggle with it?
We find success in I wait with him for the bus, and we play football with the union, mm-hmm. and he loves it. He's so happy. And I even eventually start smiling. Especially when, you know, I do something goofy and he thinks it's hilarious. But you know, I'm not going to do that at 7 o'clock in the morning before breakfast and all that. So he, you know, he's still just playful and he just wants to play.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's football
or that's a real motivator for him.
Playing.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Even his sister. His sister's usually in bed still, but any of us playing with him, playing anything with him really, is motivating to him.
Mm-hmm.
But playing something active.
How do you deal with it when he's at near the end of the day, or is it not a problem yet because he's so young? When he's not actively engaged, when he is getting tired and worn out.
You know, he can get, the way that y'all were talking a little bit earlier, he can get a little, like when it's homework time, he can get a little spacey too. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, okay, you know, I know you, working on multiplication, like I know you know this, you know, but like you still have to practice it. And he's just like, okay. But there's usually in the evening, you know, he gets rewarded with tablet time, which he's completely obsessed by. So
if you know that he comes home spacey sort of at the end of the day, he's already had a full day, what do you do to reengage him before he has to do math?
What do I do or what should I do?
Well, I mean, have you thought about it? Is it something you do? Is it something that would be useful? Just, you know.
He's got food, you know, snack time, some protein helps.
Yeah,
we haven't done a whole lot of, he's happy playing by himself. So he does that. He just spends time with himself playing with his Legos or whatever.
Have you ever, how old is he again?
He's 10.
He's 10, so he's on that edge. I remember when my kids were young, I used to do wheelbarrows around the house before homework. Or something to, like, or sometimes we did wall push-ups or pull-up bars or just something to sort of, like, physically re-engage their bodies to re-engage their brains.
Yeah. Yep.
And so when you recognize that moment of spacey or disconnect or whatever, you can just say, oh, get back to it. But there's also an opportunity there to educate him to, it sounds like you're getting a little tired. What can you do to engage your brain? What can you do to get activated? You want to do a few push-ups? You want to, like, begin to teach him when he's having a hard time focusing, he can go do some, you know, we keep a chin-up bar in our kitchen, right? And I'll watch my son doing homework, come out, do a few chin-ups, and then go back into his room to do his homework, you know, because now he knows it actually works to engage his brain. When he was younger, I had to suggest it a lot.
And, I mean, that's a good idea. We work on weekends on, he still can't do a jumping jack and because of his coordination disorder. And so we work on that, and we do, you know, we have like a little exercise routine that we all do together. And he won't, when he'll do it, he won't always do it. But
right.
He's not always professional about things.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you want to keep it in the play realm.
Right.
Because you know he's motivated by play. So if you can help him find something playful that's actually
make it fun.
Right, that's actually engaging his brain. Because Legos is good because it will help with organization. But if it's, and so that may be a way to do it. That may be all he needs. But sometimes that if protein's not hitting it and a glass of water isn't hitting it, sometimes some kind of a physical movement can really engage.
Yep.
Brian, what about you?
Well, first of all, I just want to come to your house and do wheelbarrow races before homework because that sounds like a lot of fun.
It's been a few years now, I have to say, but in the old house, it was a thing.
Yeah, no, I get it. I think that's awesome. Or
I would kick him out and make him run around the cul-de-sac, but he didn't like that nearly as much.
Well,
no,
I've tried that
good.
Too, but
I
they don't
try
they don't
to
like
say,
that.
You know, do push-ups until I'm tired.
Right.
No, and it's a great thing, I know, and they'll do that at school a lot. And, you know, we try to let our kids, if they're doing that kind of stuff, you know, stand while you're doing it. Or it's all part of that kind of making a game and silliness out of it. But it does kind of get the juices going, if you will. And then you can maybe have some more focus on task. And that's something that, especially if you're in that sluggish kind of inertia state, it's like, okay, let's break out of this by doing something that maybe doesn't require, you know, I guess depending on wherever your physical limitations are, but doesn't require a whole lot of thought process or mind-muscle connection. Just gets you moving, gets you energetic, and then it's like, okay, maybe transition to something else.
Right.
And I think something that we found kind of helps, it's just if everyone's got to do something, and then that's really helpful. And one of the best things we can do is when we can make it happen, if you sit down next to that kid and engage with them and help them pattern and model it and say, okay, here's your choice. Would you like to watch a video with me for 5 minutes before we start this project? And then kind of, you know, ask us, how should we start this? They respond a lot more calmly and better than just you need to get your homework done. And they're frozen with, what does that mean? I'm not sure what's got to be done. So that's a big success for us, is we can sit down one-on-one and kind of walk them through the process, and maybe you're doing that wheelbarrow race or whatever with them to get it engaged. That helps. And they can talk through. It's almost like talk therapy. You talk yourself into being engaged.
Well, but what I would add to it is, so doing a wheelbarrow race isn't talking yourself into being engaged. It's actually engaging the brain. And that's
that's right.
It's not about, like, we have this tendency, and our kids have this tendency to say, okay, I got to get my, I'm back to it. It's sort of like, I'm going to try harder now, right? And instead of trying
harder. And it's not an effort issue with these kids, that's right.
Right, right. Instead of trying harder, sometimes we need to stop and say, okay, what will activate? What will click it in? And if you teach them to you know, do something physical, if you teach them that process of we're doing this now so that you'll be ready to do your homework, they begin, that's a skill they're going to learn and keep and use. I mean, I watch my daughter in college now, and she boggles my mind the way she schedules ways to get herself activated. She actually took a job because she knew it would get her up on Tuesday and Thursday mornings, a job she wanted.
Right.
Because she knew her biggest time to do work was late mornings on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and she knew she would never get up to do it. So she put a structure in place to get herself to get activated.
Yeah.
Right.
No,
I didn't have anything to do with it.
And the other one we find is really, as we sit down there and do that talk to get ready, if you incentivize the brain activation, right? So what do you say we do this, and then we can do this afterwards? They're jumping to, oh, there's this reward on the back side of it, and now it's giving them a goal or something they want to do, right? And that often helps to activate or engage the brain, is that idea of, oh, because they're drawn to, what's next? What's the most fun for me? It's like, okay, here's something that's really fun I'm going to get to do, but I've got to do this one step to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other piece that jumped out at me as you said that was that then you have that opportunity to start transferring the baton and stop having it be we do, but what do you need to do to get engaged? What motivation would work for you? What incentive, reward, whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And similarly with you, Julia, to say, okay, it looks like you're getting a little, it's hard to focus right now. What movement would you like that might help you get your brain back in gear? So he gets to say, I want to do jumping jacks or, you know, somersaults.
Right.
And he's learning, when I engage my body, it engages my brain.
Right.
Right. I mean, the research on it was, something about if kids get 10 minutes of recess before a test, their scores went up, I don't know, 30% or something, significantly. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, you were saying.
No, he gets, not always, but he gets so focused sometimes on the reward, on the, you know, the tablet time afterwards, and that it looks like he's, like, vibrating. he's like, okay, like, okay, like, you know, are we done? And he can sometimes, maybe that's a good time for me to do that too. Cause he is so literally obsessed by, you know, this game on the tablet that he's like, okay, what do I need to do? Like, can we just finish? Like, done. You know, he'll do it, but his mind isn't on it. But that would also be a good time to, that's a slightly different issue from wanting to activate or engage. Well, no, it's about engagement.
It is.
But
it's
a different problem.
But what you're describing is that he's getting hyper-focused on the reward and having a hard time being present.
Correct.
To where he is.
Correct.
And so what that raises for me is, would, instead of having a reward, be, you know, play with, are there other ways to get him activated besides a reward?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and see. And so there's sort of two pieces. One is to figure out what the engagement opportunities are for them. And the other is to begin to bring their awareness to it, to help them see that part of their job to get themselves to do anything is to get their brain engaged and activated, and that they're going to have that it's always going to be about finding those ways to engage themselves, and we want it to become their job, not ours. Right.
Yep.
So let's look at the topics that you took aim on today and see what comes up, right? So, Julia, for you, it's about keeping the volume down, which is pure activation, right? He's already activated.
Yes. So how do you deactivate? And he gets medication, you know, and it works, and but you know, it's not going to work
right away.
It doesn't work first thing. No, and it takes a while.
Does he know
and still
this is an issue?
I don't know. You know, there are some things that he gets out of it besides just being that. You know, if he wakes up his sister, she's crabby and crying, and that's rewarding to him.
Oh, that's rewarding to him. Okay, because that's
mm-hmm.
interesting and stimulating. Okay.
Mhm. It's like look
okay.
what I did. Yeah.
Okay. I guess what I was asked is interesting. It was an interesting answer because what I was really thinking when I was asking the question was, is he aware that this is a behavior you'd like to see changed?
Maybe not as clearly as I see it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I'm sure he's aware
quiet,
that you're constantly nagging, right? Being quiet, telling him to
right,
be quiet, right?
Right, 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 right.
But have you ever had the conversation that says, you know, I realize you're a morning person and I'm not quite up in the morning, and, you know, sort of design how to relate to each other in those early hours, minutes?
It's worth a try.
What do you expect would happen?
I wouldn't expect any change, but I don't know.
If you set that expectation clearly without, you know, judgment and without punitive anything, just, you know, sort of like a request of you from you,
uh-huh.
when you reminded him, would he be more likely to go, oh, sorry, instead of being annoyed
yeah,
by
he
it?
Might. He might. Yeah, 'cause, I mean, if he's learned other social things, I'm sure he could eventually learn that.
Well, I mean, what strikes me about it, right, well, but what strikes me about it is that there's, you know, particularly at 11, right, he still wants to please on some level.
Yes, definitely.
And if it's not about him, but it's actually about you, right, I'm
mm-hmm.
not a morning person, and it takes my brain a while to wake up in the morning. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is what I'm asking for because it's hard for me. It actually, for the first time, makes it not about him having a problem, but it's actually you're having a problem you're asking his help with.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he definitely does still want to please, and he wants to. And once he learns sort of rules and social rules, he's relatively, you know, he does try to follow them.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I think we often do is we assume that they know what we want without communicating it clearly. It's sort of
mm-hmm.
like what you were saying about, we were talking about cleaning up after dinner, Brian, right? It's like, I know I wanted him to clear the counters and you know, I may not go as far as sweep the floor, although that would be lovely. I'm not, you know, I'm not going to go that far. But it took me a long time to figure out that he didn't know that's what I meant. So I had the expectations, but I wasn't communicating them clearly. And that's a key part to having any expectation is actually to communicate it so they know what's expected of them. Otherwise, it's not sort
of.
And
that's almost kind of having the checklist of have you done these things. It means these things, and how do we activate or engage your brain to, first of all, get started,
mm-hmm.
right, with the task, but then to make sure you've done the task in the same way that we expect. How
right.
do you create a picture? Is it, you know, a picture of the clean table that you're looking at? Is it a picture of the sink that you're looking at? Is there any dishes in it? You know, is it a picture of that floor that's been swept and mopped and then, you know, had some wood wax applied to it as well with a toothbrush.
Right, because I do that every night after dinner, right?
Absolutely. Or is it just
a
picture of,
my broom.
or just a picture of, like, dead mice that you would have that we've caught occasionally that you would have if you don't do these things?
Ooh, that would be a kind of incentive, I guess. Let's say may not live in the positive parenting realm. How about that?
Or pictures of the opossums that we had to trap this fall and raccoons and that kind of stuff, too, that we had. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You did move to the country, didn't you?
We did, yeah.
So, okay. So having a picture, for example, of what does it look like when it's done, the table or the sink or whatever, right? I think the other piece is the difference between how do you ask. Like, is it a reasonable expectation for them at their different developments to remember to start it, follow through, and finish it without any reminders?
I mean, that's the end game, right?
Right, that's the end game. Is that where you are? Like, what's the first step that we're looking for? So if you look at the kids cleaning up after dinner, right, or after snacks and dinner, what's the first stage?
Recognition that they have to do something, right? I mean, I'd settle for the, you know, dishes moved from the table and trash thrown away would be a great, if we got that consistency, then we can go on to the next step of maybe the dishes travel the dishwasher. The last one is, you know, then maybe you actually wipe the table too, and then maybe, you know, occasionally someone swept or vacuumed the floor. But,
right.
I mean, the first one is
so
just
the first step is
the
actually
recognition
just clearing
that
the plates.
That you don't just get up and leave whatever you were eating there and it's gonna magically be gone by the morning because, you know, Cinderella's gonna be up all night sweeping up after the stepsisters.
Mm-hmm. So if you separate out snack and dinner, do you have a process around dinner where everybody's sitting around having dinner together and it's sort of clear that dinner is over, or do people come in and out as they need?
It depends on the evening. The one evening we try to do dinner as a family is Sunday night. But usually during the week, it's kind of hit and miss. Because people have different kids have sports practice or theater or debate or whatever.
Right.
Or parents have stuff too. So, you know, to the extent we have like three people sitting down at a table together and in any given night during the week, that's a pretty good one.
Okay. So if there are three people sitting, I mean, is there a sense of start and finish to dinner for what you're talking about? For whoever's there.
Yeah, if people are sitting down together, I think there's definitely, because you don't get up unless you've been excused from the table.
Okay.
And so in those circumstances, it's not bad because, okay, you can be excused and you take your, you know, if you happen to get like, oh, what does being excused mean? What do you have to do? And then that, you know, gets the, and you can also, when you've got the group, it's like, okay, how about if I do this part and you wipe the table, I'll pick up all the plates,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you wipe the table for me.
Right.
That's not
take
where
out
we
the
struggle
for me.
As much because, that's right.
Right, but anyway,
it's
I'm
when
waiting.
The kids got to go to play practice and they're eating first, or the other kid wasn't hungry yet because their medicine hadn't worn off, so they're going to eat at 6:30. You know, as long as there's adult companionship at dinner, it's not as much of an issue.
So really, you're taking aim on the kids eating in the kitchen by themselves.
More so, yeah. That's why I was kind of initially going with the snacks, right?
Snacks, right.
But then expanding to dinner if you're not eating, but because their snacks are usually eating more by themselves.
Right. Okay, so it's when the kids are eating in the kitchen, snacks or dinner by themselves without an adult there, right?
Yep.
So
the absolute
do you believe
terror
they have
unsupervised eating.
So unsupervised eating, right, which is, that's a really interesting distinction. So do you believe they understand the expectation?
It's been explained, yeah.
Okay. So it's been explained, but do you believe that they get that it's a real expectation, or it's just another one of those things that you'd like them to do? Because they know it's an expectation when they're excused from the table, right?
Yeah.
Like that one they own. Is that correct?
So I think they inherently know it. I think they're running on their own. Their mind is what's next, is the next exciting thing, and I'm just going to go, right? They've got something else that their brain is over-engaged or over-activated, and they're just jumping straight to, my body needs food. I've been told I have to eat something before I do something next, and now I'm going to go, I met that goal, now I'm doing the next thing.
So, but what's different about when they're at the table? What's happening when they're at the table with an adult? When they get up from the table with an adult, they know to pick up their stuff, right?
Because we tell them and remind them.
So they're never picking it up independently.
Well, sometimes they are, because I think it's that they're asking to be excused, right? And sometimes, mm-hmm. Sometimes they do pick up after themselves for snack. It's not like they never, ever do.
No, I know, yeah.
It's just much more of a challenge, right? So,
right.
I mean, I think sometimes it's the setting of having others there, and maybe it's a social expectation or whatever, but it's
mm-hmm.
part of it's that action of, can I be excused now?
Right.
Right?
Right. So they actually almost have like a trigger, in a positive way. They have a reminder.
Yeah. Yep.
So there is there's a structure for them that says, take my stuff to the sink, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
It sounds like what works for them, they're used to having a structure to take their stuff to the sink. And so maybe the place to look here is to help them come up with a structure that reminds them when there's nobody there.
No, I agree. And whether that's, maybe they could be yelling and asking some ghost for permission to leave the table or something like that. Maybe we just, I don't know, it's Halloween, maybe we keep one of the skeletons out and put it, replace the table, and we have to ask the skeleton to be dismissed.
Excused. I love that. Right. Is to sort of bring in a little play, use a structure that's already working for them. I mean, you start with the expectation. We really want you guys to clear the table, even when we're not here. This is we've got animals in this house. We live in the country. This is really important. And get them to be part. I mean, get them to be part of the conversation of, asking to be excused works when we're here. What do you think might help remind you when we're not here? And then you can suggest as part of it, the ghost or the witch or whatever, and let them come up with some creative ideas. But bring them into the problem solving.
Because you're
starting with what's working. You already have something that works. So you want to take that success and transfer it to another area.
And you're 95%+ certain that I'm a bad parent if that thing they have to ask to be excused is a possum in a trap, on a live possum in a trap on the table?
Yeah, I don't think I'd put a possum on the table. But you could put a picture if that was really important to you. But from a health standard,
this is the result. Because if you don't clear your table, we're going to keep having possums. So you have to ask Mr. Possum to be excused.
Yeah, that would be gross but funny. And, humor works in your family, so.
Yeah, okay.
Ask them. Everybody but your daughter may buy into that process of we're putting a gross picture of a possum on the table, right?
Yeah,
But getting them into the process, bring them into the problem solving around it, and use what's already been successful elsewhere to help them sort of think through. Acknowledge what they are doing well. And I don't know how much this has to do with anything with activating the brain, but it does. It is about, it's a reminder. They need a reminder.
No, I think that's very much an activating the brain or engaging the brain in the right thing it needs to be engaged at that time. And that reminder can help activate or engage the brain, right? I mean, that's exactly, that's what I'm thinking too, is how do you get that, you know, when we're doing the subtle prompt, if we're all there, when they're not having someone there, how do they still get that same prompt we'd otherwise be getting them?
Well, and we want them to learn to start prompting themselves, right?
That's right.
So,
that's exactly right.
We often talk about it. There's sort of two kinds of structures. There's restarters and reminders. And so this is a reminder structure or system or whatever. Julie, what about you? What's coming up for you in this conversation? Because I know we're sort of wrapping up. I want to move to the final four. But so what's coming up in terms of clarity for you? What's your takeaway?
I think having more than one, several, it'll take more than one talk, but having a very short conversation about, morning times and noise, I think is a very, it was a great idea, and I will try it. I will have a talk with him tonight and have it again tomorrow morning.
Okay.
And I think, you know, and my husband has said, well, Max, just go in the basement, you know. It's like there's places in the morning where he can make noise, and so go for it, you know. Like if you want to, if you can't help it, then you know, here's two places you can do that. He's not going to want to do that, but, but you know.
Yeah, and here's
really
a pillow
this,
you can scream into, and yeah.
Right.
Cool. So for you, it's really about being very clear on the expectation and making them aware of it in the first place, sort of making the request.
Correct. Right. And that'll take several. I know that'll take, you know, and my expectation, like, you know, it's not. This isn't going to be realistically. This isn't going to be a one time. Here's what you need to do, because that's not going to work with him.
No, but if you can get him to a point where he's conscious of it and trying, that's huge.
Yeah, yes.
Right?
Definitely.
But, you know, and I think what we want to be aware of is the shoes on the stairs test. I often call it that. You know, that tendency where you put the shoes on the stairs and then they start walking by it because they don't know you put on the shoes on the stairs for them to take the shoes upstairs. But you know you expect them to take the shoes up the stairs. But they don't know that, and so then you start getting irritated because they never took the shoes up the stairs.
Right, right.
When you never said in the first place, hey, could you take the shoes up the stairs?
Anything that's on the stairs belongs to you. It needs to go upstairs, right.
It needs to go upstairs, right. It's just, you know, we forget sometimes to really clearly communicate the expectations.
Yep.
So, cool. And, Brian, what about you? Takeaway.
Despite the, other than the scintillating debate on engaging or activating the brain, the big takeaway is, you know, really that, and it makes sense. How do we create similar patterns so that they develop this self-reliance and are able to kind of self-activate, and it's always finding those keys. It was really cool for you to talk about your daughter's trick of getting the job to get herself up on those certain mornings. And it's just fantastic to hear those stories of kids maturing and developing those skills, because that's the long-term ultimate success. And also, like,
right.
You know, Celia's son playing, football. I mean, that's a huge success to be go into that social situation that our kids struggle so much in. And enjoy it, not just get through it and then leave at the end of it. But to be enjoying it and having fun with it, that's great. So,
yeah.
Big takeaways.
Super, super, super.
Thank you.
All right, my friends, my pleasure. It was a really interesting conversation, and I appreciate your input actually on engagement versus activation, because I think of it that way, and I will sort of use the term more because I appreciate really what you said. And on that note, I think we can call it a wrap. You guys are awesome and rocking it, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right,
thank you so much.
Take care, guys. Bye.